I'm Dr. Emily Silverman, and welcome to Talking Dementia with Remo Health. Join us as we explore the latest advances, insights, and strategies that help empower those living with dementia and the families that support them. Each episode, we sit down with leading experts, from physicians and researchers to policymakers and clinicians, to provide you with the resources needed to navigate this complex disease. Today, we're speaking with Mary Osborne. Mary is a licensed occupational therapist with over a decade of experience specializing in dementia care. She holds a master's of occupational therapy from LSU and has worked in a variety of settings, including skilled nursing facilities and home health. Mary is the founder of the platform Your Dementia Therapist and contributes regularly as an educator, speaker, and content creator focused on practical, evidence-based strategies for dementia caregivers. Mary, thank you so much for coming on the show.
Thank you for having me.
So Mary, tell us, what is occupational therapy and how did you come to the field?
Yes, I am so glad we are starting off with this question. Anytime I have told someone that I'm an occupational therapist, they will be like, oh, I'm retired. I'm not looking for a job. So I'm glad that we're kind of diving into this question. So an occupational therapist, what we do is we help maximize quality of life after an injury or after a diagnosis that has impacted someone's independence in some sort of way. The best way I can describe what we do is give a few examples of how we can help. So let's say that someone has had a fall and that resulted in a hip fracture, and now that person needed surgery. And they're no longer operating at that independent level that they were functioning at in the past, you know, prior to the fall, prior to the surgery. So now that person has experienced some sort of decline in their day-to-day activities, and they just need a little bit of rehab to help maximize their function, get them back to that independent status. So as an occupational therapist, I would work with them, find out their goals, assess where they're at, and incorporate different strategies and different strengthening modalities to help that person get back to that independent status. Now, if we are talking about a progressive condition like dementia, we work with that person with different strategies, different types of equipment to help that person remain as independent as possible by meeting them where they're at. For example, if I am evaluating somebody who's living with dementia and they're in the middle stages of dementia, in the middle stages of dementia, they're going to need some help with their day-to-day task. And this could look like that person needing help with feeding themselves. I know that with this diagnosis, that person is going to need more help with their day-to-day activities. So I'm not going to expect to get that person back to an independent level again if they're in the middle stages of dementia. Instead, I'm going to meet them where they're at. I'm going to help offer strategies and different types of equipment that they can use to help them be as independent as possible. So maybe this looks like, for that example, self-feeding. Maybe this looks like me offering a different colored plate. Maybe this is a red plate so they can see the food better. Maybe during my assessment, I noticed that they can't really see the food on their plate, and that's why they're not feeding themselves. So with this red plate, it provides that visual contrast so that person can then identify the food, and hopefully this will help them get started with the task, or maybe I can help them get started and then they can help complete the remainder of the task. So it's really looking at the whole person, assessing where they're at and what that person needs to help maximize their independence, optimize their function, and just get them back to as independent as they can be.
So the phrase occupational therapy, some people think it has to do with finding a job or an occupation, but really it's more about how we occupy our time. So dressing, eating, walking, those sorts of things. Is that right?
Exactly. Yes. All the activities that we do as part of our daily routine.
And how did you come to occupational therapy? I always think about occupational therapy and physical therapy and speech and language therapy there's just a lot of different types of therapy. So how did you come to OT?
When I was doing my undergrad in kinesiology, everyone would talk about physical therapy and speech therapy. And then someone was like, oh, you should look into occupational therapy. It's so fun. It's so great. And I remember looking into it. And then I did some observation hours at a pediatric clinic. And when that happened, I was like, okay, maybe I should go into occupational therapy. I'll get my undergrad in kinesiology and then I'll apply to grad school for occupational therapy. And here I am.
What is kinesiology? That's such a great word.
Yes, the study of the human movement in the body and that sort of thing.
And what do you learn when you're studying kinesiology? I'm just really curious about that.
You take all the different science classes is the best way I can describe it. You take like biology, chemistry. It's basically all the things that you would take if you were going to like med school.
Got it. So when we think about OT, often we think about people with orthopedic injuries, like maybe they've just had some kind of joint replacement surgery or something like that. And like you said, with dementia, it's really different because it's a progressive disease. It's not something that we're necessarily going to be cured of, unlike a knee injury, for example, where you can rehab and recover and get back to baseline. That's not the case with dementia. And like you said, often it's about meeting people where they're at. So is it common for occupational therapists to get involved in dementia care? And how did you get interested in this patient population?
In one of my classes in OT school, we actually had these two OTs that came in and they were talking about dementia. They brought so many different activities. I just remember them bringing puzzles. They brought beads. They brought stuffed animals. And they were just talking about the difference that we can make in someone who's living with dementia's life. And in school, you get the framework, you get the education on everything, but this was before we had started clinical, so I really had no clinical experience with it. My first job out of school was actually at a skilled nursing community, and at the skilled nursing community, they had an area that was a memory care unit within the community. And that was really my first experience treating someone who was living with dementia. And I remember in that moment just connecting everything. And I was like, I remember whenever those two OTs came to our class, they were talking about dementia. And why this resonated with me was because I remember my first patient that I went to go see, I was like, hey, I'm Mary. I'm your occupational therapist. We're going to do some exercise today. And I remember that person pouring a juice on me. And I was like, what did I do? What did I say? What's going on? And I will never forget that moment because from that moment on, I was just like, well, maybe I didn't communicate in the way that I should have. What happened? So from that day, I remember connecting, okay, this is what those OTs came to class about. They were talking about dementia. And then I just started researching everything related to dementia. I remember going on YouTube, looking up Tipa Snow, going to all the continuing ed classes and just really educating myself on everything to know about dementia in order to help with different communication strategies and different things that we could do to help individuals living with dementia. It was from that moment on to where I was just really curious. And I was like, I just want to help in the biggest way that I can. So in order to do that, I need to learn everything I can about dementia.
I love that story because you could imagine a young occupational therapist going to a skilled nursing facility, encountering a patient with dementia, introducing themselves to the patient, and then the patient spills a juice box on them. And you can imagine them saying, this isn't for me. I'm going to go back to my patients with the knee replacement. But you chose to lean into that. You actually got curious about this person and why they poured the juice box on you. So tell me a little bit about why you leaned in and what exactly about that made you curious. It just seems like a wise or mature response to a situation that sounds like it may have been a little awkward.
I just remember being in that memory care unit and I was like, I know that there's so much that I can do to help this person or to help these individuals living with dementia. And I just remember going home and thinking that. And then I just went on my computer and I was like, what do I need to know about dementia? It was just one of those moments. Maybe it was just a calling. Maybe in that moment, it was just God saying, hey, this is what you need to be doing. And so ever since then, that is what I did. My entire career has been working with older adults, skilled nursing communities, memory care communities, home health, and that sort of thing. So I was just really curious. And I just knew that there was a way that I could have communicated it better. And there was so much that I just didn't know that I wanted to figure it out. And I wanted to figure out what I could do to help and how I could be the best OT that I could be.
So you go home, you get on your computer, you start learning everything that you can about dementia. I can sense it as you're talking that you're the type of person who's like a sponge, like you just suck it all up. What were some of the first things you found or that you learned that maybe were different from some of the things that you learned in school about different patient populations?
Whenever I first researched dementia, no one was really talking about dementia at that time. I mean, that was back in 2012. And so when I was researching it, it was Tipa Snow. So I don't know if you know who Tipa Snow is, but she is also an occupational therapist and she's one of the OGs. She was back in the day talking about dementia when nobody else was. And so I just remember watching all of her YouTube videos and I was just so intrigued. And it was just strategies to help with different changes in behavior. And as I was doing that, I became interested. I was like, okay, well, now I need to see like what continuing ed classes I could find on dementia. Came across someone named Lanny Butler, who's also an OT. He's an OT and a PT. And he wrote this book called My Past is Now My Future. And he put together this continuing ed class. And he was just talking about all the different ways that we can help throughout the different stages of dementia. And it was just so incredible. And I remember leaving feeling so inspired, like, wow, there are so many things that we can do to make a difference in people's life. And ever since that moment, I just remember like soaking up all that information and just wanting to know as much as I could to help as many people involved. Because like I mentioned, it wasn't really being talked about at the time. Like Tipa Snow, Lanny Butler, those were pretty much the only two people really talking about dementia and how we can help and really make a difference.
Yeah, sometimes they say when the student is ready, the teacher appears.
And it sounds like I love that.
That happened in a way with you. Yeah. So what are some commonly overlooked factors that can impact a person with dementia's ability to be independent, whether it's eating or bathing or dressing independently? Like, what are some of the most common low-hanging fruit areas that you look at when you're evaluating a patient?
So whenever I say the word dementia, or whenever just anyone hears the word dementia, what is the first word that you think of? You think of like problems with
Memory.
Exactly. That's the first thing that the majority of people say. They're like, this person's not remembering anything. It's the dementia. I want to bring this up because although that's the first thing that everyone says, right? Memory impairments. But there's so much to understand when it comes to the memory impairments. There's over 100 different types of dementia. Alzheimer's, the most common type of dementia, the first thing that we'll start noticing is memory impairment. So difficulty with short-term recall. So maybe that person's not remembering that they didn't shower that day. They're not remembering what they had for breakfast. And I say this because something common that caregivers will face when they are caring for someone who's living with dementia in the middle stages is if they go up to the person living with dementia and they tell them, hey, you need a shower. And the person's like, I've already showered. I just did it. The caregiver may think that that person's giving them a hard time or they're being stubborn and they just don't want to shower. But really, short-term memory is being impaired. So they don't remember completing that task, which is why they're telling you that they did it because in their mind, they already completed it. So I think that is really important to understand about memory impairment and really understand what that actually looks like. So that would be the most common thing that we think of. Another factor that I wanted to bring up is anosognosia, which the frontal lobe of our brain is responsible for things like problem solving, for awareness, for insight. Someone living with dementia in the beginning stages, the frontal lobe of the brain is affected. So the awareness, the insight, the problem solving is being impaired. What may look like to us that the person is just being stubborn, that they're denying their dementia, it's really just that lack of insight, of understanding that they have a condition that is causing those impairments. So they don't understand that they need help with their day-to-day tasks because that level of insight is impacted. So I think that's a huge commonly overlooked factor, is that anosognosia, where the frontal lobe of the brain is impacted in that sort of way, because we may just look at it, like I mentioned, as that person being stubborn and they just don't want to do that, but they really are lacking the insight to be able to understand how that condition is affecting their ability to complete the day-to-day activities. The third one that I will mention is initiation. And I think that this is a huge one that is often overlooked. With initiation, what I mean by that is that person starting a task. So maybe I'm helping that person get dressed and I'm putting all of the clothes in front of them and I'm just expecting them to start. I'm like, here are clothes, get dressed for the day. And they're not starting the task of getting dressed. And one of the reasons that they may not be starting that task is because the frontal lobe of the brain is being impacted and they just need someone else's help to initiate that for them. So if I have the clothes laid out, I can say, okay, let's get your top on and help with that initiation in that way. And maybe that is enough for that person to continue with the task. So I think that that is another factor that is commonly overlooked in the area of caring for someone living with dementia.
I love that, because you talk sometimes about in dementia having to be a detective more than in other diseases. So someone has a broken leg, they have a broken leg. But with dementia, these symptoms may hide themselves as, like you said, oh, they're just being stubborn or they're in denial. But actually, if you're able to get underneath that, you realize that it's actually something deeper. So I'm wondering if you can talk a little bit more about this, almost like a root cause analysis, or when you're taking care of someone with dementia and they're having a behavior or a lack of behavior, I guess, in the case of the initiation one, how do you think about curiosity? That word keeps coming up again and again, getting curious about it and then probing it in different ways to try to get underneath and figure out what's actually driving the behavior, whether it's a symptom or whether there's some other driver that we don't immediately see.
I always say being a detective, and that is so important whenever we are caring for individuals living with dementia. As an occupational therapist, I like to think of occupational therapists as master problem solvers. Like, okay, let's get to the bottom of this. Why is this person reluctant to perform this task? And so perfect example of this was I actually had a patient refer to me. This was when I was working in a skilled nursing community. And the staff was having difficulty getting this person into the bathroom to toilet to help change the clothes because this person was incontinent, meaning that they were unaware that they had to use the bathroom. So the staff had to help with changing the clothes, getting off and on the toilet and that sort of thing. So as an occupational therapist, go in, assess the situation and see what I can do to help everyone involved and how I can help the staff toilet, because toileting is actually an activity of daily living, which is what we call ADLs in the world of occupational therapy that we address. So I learn more about that person. And I know that this person, she was obsessed with headbands, had a beautiful collection of headbands. And I'd actually already known this previously because I had seen this person around the community. And I'm like, gosh, this person always has like the coolest headband. So I went up to this person, complimented the headband, told that person I loved it so much. And I would love to see the collection of her headbands. And I knew that the collection of headbands was in the bathroom. So we go into the bathroom, showed me the headbands, and we were just building rapport. I was just talking about the headbands and she was showing me her collection. I was like, gosh, like, can I try one on? I would love one for myself. Like, where did you get these? So right then and there, what did I do? I got her into the bathroom. And then before we actually left, it was the perfect chance to help with toileting. I was like, oh, you know what? Before we go, let's go in here and we're going to freshen up. This is just the perfect example of when we really take the time to be creative, we build rapport, we figure out different ways to communicate, and we focus less on the task that has to be completed and more on the human being in front of us. It's just so, so important. I always say, don't focus on the task itself, which kind of seems paradoxical because it's like, hey, that's what we're trying to do. We're trying to get this person to toilet. But the completion of the task really comes as a result of us being creative and building that rapport with that person. So for any caregiver listening to this, it's really about being a good observer. just listening to your person and knowing their interests. Like, what do they enjoy? What lights them up? What is something you can bring up in conversations with them that really brings out their sense of joy and fun? And then in that situation, the task is completed as the result, because we're just focusing on having fun and just being in that moment.
Yeah, like you said, a lot of caregivers sometimes can get really focused on, like, I need my person to do this thing, and using everything that's there as a way to guide the person toward that action instead of doing it in the forcing way. It's such a great way of thinking about it. And I wanted to talk a bit about your Calm Caregiver Toolkit, which you created to help support overwhelmed dementia caregivers. What are some of the tools or principles included in the toolkit, and how do you help use those tools to shift the mindset or the day-to-day experience of the caregiver toward this more creative and curious and holistic way of interacting with dementia patients?
The toolkit is a resource I created that just helps simplify the caregiving journey. And it's intended for family caregivers. So a lot of what's inside of the toolkit actually came from my membership program that I've run the past 2 years. And I turned the membership evergreen. I wanted a way to just like make it accessible for anyone needing help now without a big time or financial commitment. So what I did was, is I put a 9-video mini course with printable downloads. And these lessons are like 5 to 15 minutes long, but they really share how to help care for the person living with dementia. So if any caregivers are out there like, gosh, I don't know how to help. They won't participate in activities. I'm seeing these changes in behavior. I have different videos that run through how to help your person and also how to help yourself in the process, because you can't help your loved one in the biggest way if you're not taking care of yourself first. So talk a lot about how to help your person, how to help yourself in the process. I have weekly coaching videos that are sent to their email every week that just talk about a different topic, anything that my caregivers had asked in the past whenever I was running the membership. So I just repurpose all those videos. Great questions from different caregivers. And so it's just incredible the way that the caregivers would engage in the content. And really, they're curious. They're asking questions. They're really wanting to know what they can do to help their person in the best possible way. And so every week I put together different videos that address the questions that they were having or the concerns they were seeing, or maybe it was something that inspired me that week. So I put all of this into weekly coaching videos that I send out. I also have recorded Q&A sessions with different experts in the field, like a neurologist, financial advisor, grief coach, and just different tools to just help with changes in behavior, communication, just a way to make dementia feel a little less complex and just give caregivers the confidence to empower them with different strategies that they can use to improve the care for themselves and also for their loved one in this process.
What are some of the most common questions that come up from dementia caregivers? Is it focused around food and eating, or is it focused around bathing or sleep or behavior when you're out in the world? Let's say you go to a store or something and there's some disruptive behavior happening, or maybe some of it's just processing grief, or I don't know. What are some of the most common topics that come up?
I would say a lot of caregivers struggle with, my person is refusing to perform, specifically related to dressing and bathing, or they're wearing the same clothes over and over. They're not wanting to bathe. How can I help? Or just like general questions about the diagnosis. Like, is it normal that I'm needing to help them more? And how do I provide this help? So just different questions like that. And then also questions related to dementia, like, is Alzheimer's the same thing as dementia? I think that's one of the most common questions I get in general. I've heard Alzheimer's, I've heard dementia. What is this? Is this the same thing? Also, what I've found from a lot of caregivers is that they found my information and they said that when they are going to the primary care physician, it's just like they're getting that diagnosis and they're just left with a pamphlet and that's it. And they're like, what do I do now? Like, I want to learn how I can help myself, my person. What do I need to expect? Different things like that. So this was just my way of compiling all this information. I just remember when I first opened up my company, I was just on this mission. I started writing everything that I wish that someone would have given me. I've written ebooks, planners, so many different things, like I've helped with a program with a nonprofit to educate professional caregivers. And throughout this entire process, I'm like, what do I wish I would have known at the beginning? What would have made my life easier? Because it took me over a decade of experience to learn everything that I'm teaching now. So I was in complete silence, just writing, just putting together all the information that people were asking, things that I wish that I would have known, and just compiling it all into one place.
Wow, that's amazing. I'm sure it's such an amazing resource. One of the topics I wanted to touch on is, like you said, dementia is a progressive condition. And so taking care of someone with dementia, or even just living with dementia yourself, is often a process of continual adaptation. So the way that the person is behaving today may not be the way that they behave in 3 months or 6 months or 9 months, certainly not in 2 years or 5 years. So how do you think about that? Like, do you ever have a situation where a family is just hitting a rhythm and then something changes and they have to kind of go back to the drawing board, and the frustration that comes out of that? And how do you coach people through those changes that are always going to be happening because it is a progressive disease?
Adapting to this diagnosis is so important because things, like you mentioned, they're constantly changing with a dementia diagnosis. So caregivers who are listening to this, if you're experiencing that frustration, this is completely normal. There's nothing wrong with you. Changes in behavior are happening. And I think that one of the most important things that caregivers can do in this process is to just educate themselves on what this diagnosis looks like, what is happening in a dementia diagnosis, and just really understanding what should they know that is quote unquote normal for this diagnosis. Like, it's completely normal for the person living with dementia in the middle stages to be reluctant to perform certain tasks at times because, like you mentioned, their brain is changing. We are going to notice like the memory impairments, the problem solving, different things related to cognition, and we're going to have to help more. And so I think that this is just such a hard thing in general to just kind of wrap our minds around, because we are expecting a different person to show up. We're expecting the person prior to the diagnosis. And when we're constantly having to adapt to these different changes, this is really, really difficult. And one of the biggest things that I can say is just educating yourself on dementia, understanding like what is normal, like I mentioned. And the second thing, which is just as important as the education, is a support group or the therapist. Someone around you that you feel safe with, that you can talk to about what you're going through, because what you're going through is really hard. And I think it's so important to normalize talking to a therapist, for example, you know, sharing like what is difficult, because they can help you through it. And also in a support group, these are just different groups that are intended for caregivers. They have different ones related to that specific type of dementia. And you can join a support group and you can join other caregivers and have that support around you. You can share what's happening because A, that makes you feel not so alone. And then B, it's someone that you can talk to and share these things with, so you don't feel so isolated and alone throughout this process. And there are going to be a lot of situations to where you are having to navigate this diagnosis with your loved one, and it is a lot to adapt to, right? So if there is a specific recurring situation that is just driving you crazy and you're like, oh my gosh, this keeps happening, what can I do? So thinking about what can you do to help make the situation better, and just taking that first step, even if it doesn't seem like it's a big step, maybe it's something as simple as like, okay, I just need to talk to a professional, and just letting it all out. Maybe it's journaling. So you're getting everything that's in your head onto paper. I think that this is so important. So it's just not all up here, and you can just let that out, and you can take that first step toward figuring out what you can do to help change the things that are within your control. Because obviously with the diagnosis itself, we don't have any control over dementia, but there's so many other things that we can do to help. So I think it's a combination of education, surrounding yourself with the right people to share your experience and talk to, and then figuring out, is there something I can control within this certain situation that is happening, and just taking that first step.
In addition to education and finding support in the form of a support group or a therapist or a family member or whoever that might be, do you offer any other ways of shifting mindsets or practical tools? Like, I'm just thinking about spirituality or mindfulness or concepts of surrender, or, you know, all these different ways that we can get out of the anxious, I need to fix this right now, and embrace what is. And, you know, you mentioned earlier that this work in some ways feels like a calling. And so it sounds like you might have some practices of your own, and just wondering if that's something that you have found plays into the way that families interact with the challenges of caring for a loved one with dementia.
Definitely. So with the coaching videos, like Lynn, neuroscience, spirituality, mindfulness, all of these different things that I have found helpful from my practice, from my own personal life, human beings in general, we're constantly evolving. We're constantly figuring out what's working, what's not working. How can I show up as the best version of myself? So yeah, I incorporate a lot of that inside of the toolkit. I actually have a roadmap that the caregivers will start with. And this just talks about different things and shifting that mindset and reframing it to see things from a 1,000-foot view, right? So like zooming out and really seeing, okay, what does this look like? And when it comes to helping myself in this process and helping my person. So go through, and with the roadmap, I have different videos, and then I have different questions that spark curiosity that really help with reframing the mindset, that get the caregiver really thinking about, oh, okay, like maybe I can use this in my own personal life. And of course, you know, everyone is so different with how they respond to different information. So when you hear some of this information, one of the things that you might practice might end up being the thing that you make a habit of in your day-to-day life and really see a significant difference in your life and in the person living with dementia. So there's so many different tools that I share in there that are really helping caregivers help themselves and their person.
Well, it's amazing to see how much time and effort you have poured into this work ever since that juice box getting poured on you. It kind of launched you on this beautiful journey, and just the way that you voraciously read and consume and watch the YouTube videos and find your teachers and mentors, and then you take everything that you find and put it into these distillations, these practical toolkits and resources. It's such a gift. It's such a gift to the dementia community, and it's an honor to speak with you today. So I'm wondering if, in closing, if there's anything else you would like to share with our community, either about the OT lens or just something personal from you as they navigate their own journeys with their families.
Thank you so much for having me. This was so incredible. I do want to share, since we're talking about the mindset tools, mm-hmm. I actually want to share some powerful shifts that have really helped some people in my community. So is that okay if I share?
Of course, please.
Awesome. Okay. The one thing that I wish every caregiver knew is how much power they still have, even in the face of something like dementia, because everything with dementia, it can feel out of your control. You get this diagnosis and you're like, gosh, I have no control over this. Like, oh my gosh, what do I do? But everything that caregivers are doing, so everything that you're doing, you're a caregiver out there listening to this, your energy, your presence, it matters so much more than you'll ever know. And anytime you're questioning this too, because it could feel like you're not doing enough in this role. It could feel like, oh my gosh, like I should have done X, Y, and Z and I didn't do that. But I want you to really think back to when you thought you couldn't handle this and that you wouldn't be able to do this. And look at you, you're doing it. Look at all of the obstacles you overcame, everything that you thought you would never get through. You're getting through it and you're doing it. And you're just so much more powerful than you think. And you are just incredible. So that is something that I tell my caregivers all the time. I just think that they are just superheroes. And I wanted to leave with that. So know your power. And then two, one of the biggest tools is the mind. the way that you speak to yourself matters. So we wanted to train it to work for you instead of against you. Something simple that you can do in the mornings is just affirmation. When you look in that mirror every morning, you can say something like, I know I'm facing something really difficult, but I'm getting through this with compassion, with grace, with love. And say it out loud because the brain will remember. And let yourself hear it and then make it a habit. Because the more that you speak these words to yourself, the more that you're going to believe it. So get into the habit of the way that you speak to yourself, because think about what a good friend would say to you. What would you tell a good friend who is going through a similar situation as you? Tell yourself those same words. It's so important. That would be number two, the affirmations. And then another thing that I wanted to share was just at the end of the day, naming something that went well that day, even if the whole day felt hard. Because what that does is it helps shift the brain's focus, because as human beings, after a long day and maybe a lot happened that day, a lot went wrong, what do we think about? Everything that went wrong. It's like we have to make this conscious effort to pick out something that went well. So when we get into the habit of it, we start to notice more moments like that. And it really helps on a day-to-day basis with really acknowledging what's going well and really focusing on that. So then we see more moments of progress like that. And those are just some of the small, powerful mindset shifts, but don't try to do everything all at once. So start small. So maybe there's one of these things that really resonated with you that you're like, okay, I'm going to try it, because the brain loves consistency. So start with one thing and then just practice that, make it a habit, and start to see like a difference in your day-to-day life.
Fabulous. Well, I think that's a wonderful note to end on. Tapping into the power that we do have and focusing on those small wins. It's been such a pleasure to speak with you, Mary, occupational therapist, teacher, learner, caregiver. Really, really appreciate you coming on to Remo to speak with me today.
Thank you so much for having me.
Thank you for listening. For more information about this episode, check out the links and resources listed in the show notes. If you're interested in learning more from Remo, visit us at www.remo.health. Take care.